Today's presentation focuses on a project that is assessing veteran satisfaction with the Choice Act during the first year of its implementation. The Veterans Access, Choice, and Accountability Act allows veterans to receive covered health care outside the VA if they experience wait times of greater than 30 days or if they live more than 40 miles away from a VA medical facility. This session is titled Differences in Satisfaction with Choice, Laying the Foundation for the Evaluation of the Choice Act. Dr. Susan Zickmund and Audrey L. Jones are here to present. Dr. Zickmund is the director of the VAHSR&D Centralized Transcription Services Program. She is also the associate director of the VAHSR&D's Ideas 2.0 Center of Innovation at VA Salt Lake City. Dr. Jones is a postdoctoral fellow in medical informatics at the Ideas Center. Thank you both for joining us today. Susan, can I turn it over to you?
Okay, so let's start off with a poll question. Audrey and I are very interested in understanding who's in the audience currently. So we're wondering if your primary VA role is research, operations, healthcare provider, potentially maybe your non-VA research or policy, or if you'd place yourself in the category of other. Can we take a minute for this?
And responses are coming in. We'll give everyone a few more moments to respond before we close it out and go through the results.
Great.
Looks like we've slowed down here, so I'm going to close that out. And what we're seeing is 39% of the audience saying research, 20% operations, 14% healthcare provider, 9% non-VA research or policy, and 18% other. Thank you, everyone.
Interesting. All right. Thank you. Great. All right. Well, we're going to move straight to another poll question. And we're just curious how familiar you are with the Veterans Choice Program. Would you say you are very familiar, somewhat familiar, or not at all familiar?
And again, I will give everyone a few moments to respond before we close it out and go through the results here. And it looks like we've slowed down, so I'm going to close that. And we're seeing 27% of the audience saying that they are very familiar. 62% of the audience saying they are somewhat familiar, and 12% not at all familiar. Thank you, everyone.
Okay, great, great. Okay, so I will share some of the information we already heard from HERA, but the purpose of VACA, or well, we'll describe it as the choice care. As we all know, or most of us know, there was a scandal that sort of emerged around illegal wait lists and a lot of media coverage that affected the VA, sort of beginning with the VA in Phoenix. And from that, the Choice Act was born. The purpose of Choice was to expand veteran access to care, allowing veterans to receive VA care in the community. The rollout of the program was very quick. It occurred within 90 days of the legislation. And I can share that the particular study that Audrey and I are going to be presenting to you today is a query-funded project. It was an early choice evaluation quality improvement project, really capturing the first 6 months or so of the project or of the Choice Act. Currently, little is known about patient satisfaction with choice compared to traditional VA care. Also something that's unknown are the experiences of veterans who were unsuccessful in attempts to use choice. And again, because we really were capturing the early days of choice, we found that many veterans, there were actually very few veterans who were using the choice program. We wanted to understand their experiences, but we were also interested in understanding maybe there were barriers that were causing people to want to use the choice program, but somehow they weren't being successful. So throughout the study, you'll see that we're trying to capture both of those two groups. So to answer the question of the veteran satisfaction with choice, we turned to a companion study, that is Disparities in Satisfaction with Care, or the DISC study. This is an HSR&D, IAR, and service-directed research project combined. And the goal of the DISC study was to understand if there are racial, ethnic, or gender disparities in satisfaction with VA care. For that study, veterans completed Likert scale and OpenNet and interviews about their satisfaction with VA care from June 2013 to January 2015. The recruitment focused on veterans from predominantly minority-serving VA medical centers, given our disparities interest. And we conducted semi-structured telephone interviews with 1,222 veterans from 25 VA medical centers across the country. And this just gives you a sort of visual snapshot of our largely minority-serving sites that we collected the data from. And you can see that they sort of hug the perimeter of the country. So also, as Hira had explained, the purpose of this cyber seminar is to better understand the data available to support the study of the CHOICE Act. And for our purposes, this was a prospective study. And so we focused on data primarily in identifying CHOICE eligible veterans. Again, at the early onset of the CHOICE program. I worked with Dr. Shasha Gao, who at the time was at the VA Pittsburgh Center for Health Equity Research and Promotion. I was there as well at the time. And she accessed the VA corporate data warehouse in June of 2015. And we chose a sample of veterans from one of the 25 DISC sites. So first, we were interested in CHOICE users. And so she was able to find a file that had specifically TriWest and HealthNet claims as of 6/30/2015. We're also obviously interested in CHOICE non-users. So for this cohort, there was no third-party claim. There was a CDW table that identified veterans eligible for CHOICE due to distance greater than 40 miles, wait time greater than 30 days, or both. We sought to interview 200 veterans divided between CHOICE users and non-users, and I'll frequently throughout my talk about the distinction between those two groups, and eligible by distance and or wait time. Also, to compare satisfaction with VA care, veterans had to have one VA visit in the last 24 months. So for recruitment, which was fairly similar to what we did with the DISC study, we mailed out invitations to participate using an opt-out system. And then for screening, we confirmed the patient was eligible for CHOICE in the current status of attempting to use the program, and Audrey will share some of that language. And we excluded patients who could not complete the telephone interview or who did not speak English. And Audrey, I believe this is where I hand things over to you.
Yes, thank you. So as Dr. Zicklin mentioned, we knew that some folks in the sampling frame had used CHOICE because we had third-party claims records. But we also verified whether or not they had used CHOICE in their interviews. So we asked, have you tried to receive non-VA care under the CHOICE program? And then, have you seen a non-VA provider using the CHOICE Act? And what we learned is that several participants who we had thought were non-users had actually tried to use the program and just hadn't gotten an appointment yet. So we used information from these two questions to categorize participants into three mutually exclusive groups. Those who never attempted to use CHOICE, that's the first group. Then those who attempted but did not receive CHOICE care, which is called attempt without receipt. And then those who had actually received care through the CHOICE program. Next. So we assessed satisfaction with two Likert items. We first asked, how satisfied are you with your VA healthcare overall? And then, how satisfied are you with your experience of care under the CHOICE program? So the second question, we only asked this to those participants who indicated that they had tried to use CHOICE. And for both items, participants could select from five options: very satisfied, somewhat satisfied, neither satisfied nor dissatisfied, somewhat dissatisfied, or very dissatisfied. The bottom three groups were relatively infrequent, so we combined them together into a category that we just called less than satisfied. Next. Our interviews also collected some basic sociodemographic characteristics, such as age, sex, race, ethnicity, health literacy. We asked about medical conditions from the Charlson Comorbidity Index, which is predictive of mortality. We also assessed global health, which asks, how would you rate your general health today? And then we collected some information on eligibility for choice. So participants in the sample were eligible if they lived more than 40 miles from a VA facility, if they experienced wait times greater than 30 days, or both. Next. For the statistical analyses, we compared the sociodemographic characteristics of respondents who did not attempt choice to those of respondents who attempted or received choice care. And for that analysis, we used a chi-square test for variables with categorical outcomes and analysis of variance for variables with continuous distribution. We then use a chi-square analysis to test for differences in satisfaction ratings across the choice groups. So first we tabulated the VA satisfaction rating by choice use status, and then we tabulated the choice rating by choice use status. And for the third analysis, we wanted to compare satisfaction with choice to satisfaction with VA healthcare. So this is a within subjects comparison. We basically tabulated ratings with choice and ratings with VA healthcare. And this analysis was stratified by whether or not a participant had received the choice care. We used a symmetry test, which assesses the similarity or homogeneity of the Likert responses within subjects. This is an extension of the McNamara's chi-square test when there are more than two categories. And Dr. Zipman, I'll let you tell us about the qualitative methods.
Sure. So for the semi-structured interviews, we asked about reasons for using choice, also questions on access, coordination, quality of care, program barriers, suggestions for improvement, intentions to use choice in the future. We had already developed a fairly extensive and large qualitative codebook for the DISC study that had about 500 satisfaction, dissatisfaction codes. We then adapted that codebook to make sure that it was sensitive, the themes that were coming out related to the choice program. We had a 20% intercoder reliability across the coders. We also focused here on the choice satisfaction and dissatisfaction themes emerging from our choice-specific questions. So all the quotes that you see in here today will be specific to people talking about choice.
Okay, Audrey? Yeah. So on the next slide, first I'll talk a little bit about our survey response.
Should I go?
So just as a reminder, we used a stratified sampling design, and we were hoping to interview 200 veterans who were eligible for choice. So we mailed invitations to participate to 752 veterans who we had identified as being eligible for the study. And of those, about half, 364, consented to be screened for our survey. 253 of those were eligible for the full choice interview, and 195 completed the interviews and had complete qualitative coding. So how did we get from 752 down to 195? Well, there were two main reasons or factors related to non-response. So one is that our IRB required mailed consent forms for audio recorded interviews. So we had to wait for patients to return the mailed forms prior to being interviewed. And then the second factor had to do with our stratified sampling frame. So veterans belonged to a particular cell in the sampling matrix, and oftentimes participants weren't interviewed because the cell from the matrix was filled, before they made it through the consent process to be interviewed. So the data point was no longer needed. Next. So the final sample was 195 participants. 35 of those had not attempted to use choice. 43 attempted but never received choice care. And 117 had received choice care. There were very few sociodemographic differences across the three groups. Most participants were non-Hispanic white and male. Average age was in the low 60s, and half or more participants were married. About one quarter had a high school or less education, so that is, most had some college education. And about 85 to 90% reported confidence in filling out medical forms. This was the question that we used to assess health literacy. And about half of participants rated their general health as fair or poor. The last variable on the slide is how participants were eligible for the choice program. And here we did see some statistical differences across groups. The left-hand column is, again, the group who didn't attempt to use choice. 77% were eligible due to travel distance only. Very small number, 3% were eligible based on their wait times only, and 20% were eligible due to both travel distance and wait time. The middle column is the group who attempted without receipt, and the reasons for choice eligibility were pretty similar to what we saw on the left. On the right-hand side, we have patients who actually received choice care. And in this group, more participants in our sample, 46%, experienced both long travel distance and lengthy wait times for VA care. Next. Before we jump into the satisfaction results, we do have one other poll question. How familiar are you with data on patient satisfaction with care in the VA? Would you say that you're very familiar, somewhat familiar, or not at all familiar?
And again, we'll give everyone a few moments to respond and then close it out and go through the results here. Okay, it looks like we've slowed down. I'm going to close that out. And what we're seeing is 21% of the audience saying they are very familiar, 42% saying somewhat familiar, and 37% not at all familiar. Thank you, everyone.
Okay. So in the VA, satisfaction ratings tend to be pretty positive. We usually see that a majority of veterans report that they are satisfied with care, and just a minority indicate that they're dissatisfied. In this study, we see sort of a similar pattern. The columns in this graph, so on the left, we have satisfaction for those who did not attempt to use choice. In the middle, those who attempted without receipt. And then on the right are those who received choice care. And for all three groups, we see about a third were very satisfied with VA healthcare. Another third or more were somewhat satisfied with VA healthcare, and a minority reported the less than satisfied responses. So again, these bottom dark blue groups include patients who said neither satisfied nor dissatisfied, somewhat satisfied, or very dissatisfied. And I believe for each one, less than 10% had said very dissatisfied. So there generally there is satisfaction with VA healthcare, even in our sample where everyone experienced either a travel or wait time barrier to care. And there were no statistical differences across these three groups in their VA satisfaction. Next. When we ask about satisfaction with choice, there is a much different pattern of responses. So, again, we didn't ask the non-attempters about their satisfaction with choice, if they, you know, hadn't tried using the program. In the middle column, we have the participants who attempted but didn't receive choice care again. And here, only 5% of respondents said they were very satisfied with choice. Another 13% were somewhat satisfied, and 82% were less than satisfied. And of this 82%, 54% said they were very dissatisfied with choice. In the right-hand column, these are the participants who actually received choice care. They were more satisfied with the program. The 37% said they were very satisfied. 27% said somewhat satisfied, and only 33% were less than satisfied with choice. And these two groups are statistically significantly different. The patients who received choice care were much more satisfied with the program. Next. We also wanted to statistically compare satisfaction with choice to satisfaction with VA healthcare. These are within subject comparisons. So in the group of patients who attempted without receipt, patients were much more satisfied with VA healthcare than with choice. If we look at the margins on the far right, 31% were very satisfied with VA healthcare, and only 28% were less than satisfied. On the bottom row, again, 5% very satisfied with choice, and 82% less than satisfied. So the p-value for the symmetry test here was less than 0.001, indicating that satisfaction was statistically lower with choice than with VA healthcare. Next. In this slide, we conducted the same within subjects test for the group who actually received choice care. And again here, if we look at the margins on the right and the margins on the bottom, the percentages are fairly similar. So about 37% said they were very satisfied with the VA, and 39 or 40% said they were very satisfied with choice. And the test of symmetry was the p-value associated with that test was greater than 0.05, indicating that there was no statistical difference in satisfaction with choice compared to satisfaction with VA healthcare for the group who actually received care. And Dr. Zickman, I'll let you walk us through the qualitative results.
Okay, great. Thanks, Audrey. Okay, what I'd like to do is to actually start with the dissatisfaction themes, because I think there's a good deal that we can learn about certainly the early rollout of choice, but facets of the program that may still be applicable today. So without any doubt, the greatest area of dissatisfaction were comments related to the third-party administrators. And just as a reminder, or for those who may not be as familiar with the choice program, there were non-VA administrators who were in charge of scheduling for patients when they were interested in receiving care in the community under the choice program. So, and I can say from as a person who went through the text, probably the most fervent comments, the areas of greatest dissatisfaction, I would say, in terms of intensity, those comments usually were reserved for the third-party administrators. So there were many statements, 186 statements, 35% versus 50% of participants attempting as the first cohort or receiving choice care, so those people who were successful in receiving care, talked about the third-party administrator. So as an example of someone who wasn't able to receive, they attempted to receive care, a person said, I tried in February. I spent an entire month trying to get in an appointment and couldn't get one. In May, I decided to try again. Again, another month went by, and I still don't have an appointment. Then if we talk, have the comments from somebody who actually received choice care, you have got to call to have them make an appointment, and they have to check if the doctor will take the choice card, and then they will call you back to tell you when your appointment is, blah, blah. I figured my choice card would be used like my Blue Cross Blue Shield card. I make the appointment, show my choice card, and the VA pays for it. But no, that's not the case. Another area of dissatisfaction was related to just sheer lack of information about choice. And again, people frequently talked about this. There were 122 statements, 28% and 44% of those attempting or receiving choice care. So somebody who was not able to receive choice care said, I know it's a new program, but it seemed like several of them, in this case, they're talking about the TPA, that I talked to didn't really understand it themselves. That's what it felt like. Or for somebody who received care, I'm very disappointed with the amount of work and persistence the patient has to do in order to get on board with that system. There needs to be a handbook with pitfalls. like I said, I didn't get any good info from the choice, and that includes the Tri-West people. And again, those would be the TPA or third-party administrators. Other themes that resounded: authorization and red tape. So difficulties in obtaining authorization for non-VA care. There were 69 statements, divided 21% and 29 of those attempting or receiving choice care. And similarly, we had red tape associated with choice, 70 statements with an even distribution across the two groups. So for somebody who attempted to receive choice care but did not succeed, the weakness I see is the way it was explained to me. In order to use it, I still have to wait to see my PCP from the VA to be put on a waiting list and have each individual appointment approved by my VA. I can only see her 3 times a year. It makes no sense. And then also for somebody who'd actually received choice care, in the end, I got care, and it was quicker than going to the VA, but it was a bureaucratic nightmare that you had to fight. It shouldn't be that way. Also, some individuals were really surprised to discover that they actually could have longer distances to a provider who they would receive care from via the choice program, and sometimes they also had longer wait times, and that was largely due to the inadequate provider network that existed at that time. So, for example, someone said, I tried to use choice, but they couldn't find somebody to work with them out here where I live. So this is somebody attempting to receive. Another example, I got frustrated with the program. I would like to go to the choice for mental health, but it's so much trouble to call and set up an appointment. I find out he's 5-10 minutes from the VA hospital. Well, I might as well go to the VA. There were also some specific themes that emerged from those people who had already received choice care. So one, for example, was coordinating doctors and the TPA. Somebody said they need to open up better communication between choice doctors and the TPA to schedule appointments in the choice and VA pharmacy. When I call the choice program, I have to talk to 3 or 4 different people before things get done. I don't know if the first person doesn't record it in the computer or forgets it or drops it. There are a lot of problems there. Another concern was related to billing. One person said, I'm still getting a bill from the provider because TRICARE hasn't paid the bill. And another person said, I thought the VA was going to pay for everything, and now I'm getting bills in the mail. I got bills sent to me for $300 for a urine test. Something is wrong here if you send me a bill. And I can share from the various interviews, there was a real sense of panic in this early rollout period of time for people who described themselves of limited means and receiving fairly high bills. But, of course, there were also satisfaction themes, which give us an understanding of the types of things that were really working for veterans. So I know this is counterintuitive to what I had just shared, but the reduced distance was probably the biggest source of satisfaction. So 267 statements, 79% versus 61% for choice receipt versus attempt. So someone said, if I could use it, it would be very strong because it takes me 2 hours to get to the VA. If I got to see a doctor here, it would be more convenient. So this is a person who's really interested in trying to receive services through the choice program. There's somebody with a success story. I get an appointment within a few days and not a few months, and it is closer. I mean, I don't have to get someone to drive with me to go to the doctor. I can just hop down the street because that's where he's at. Another area of real satisfaction was with the improved wait times, which again is one of the reasons the choice program was developed. So 52 statements, 21% versus 3% for choice receipt versus attempt. The choice program is pretty good at getting you an appointment when you have a doctor. At first started, it took a while. Now that I'm in, I can call the doctor and go in. Also, satisfaction with scheduling appointments, signing up for scheduling, there were 89 statements, 34% versus 12 for choice receipt versus attempt. Also signing up, 18 statements for 11% versus 5 for choice receipt versus attempt. for somebody trying to attempt receipt of choice care. So they were Johnny on the spot when I called them, and they were eager to help me to get this set up. And then they went to talk about problems that they ended up having. Another person who actually received care said, I called HealthNet, and they called me back the same day or the next day with my appointment. There was also praise for the providers, 16 statements, 10% from those who had received choice, 5% for the attempters. One quote was, choice is good once you get in. Once you get through it, it's smooth, and the providers are great. Okay, and so Audrey, I'll turn it back over to you.
Great. So we thought it was important to note that many of the participants were interested in continuing to use choice. So we asked specifically, do you intend to seek care outside the VA through the choice program in the future? And the responses to this question were coded as either yes, maybe, or no. And regardless of whether or not they actually got care, most participants, you know, indicated yes or maybe. So even in that small group that I hadn't attempted to use choice yet, 86% said they would or might use choice in the future. And some of the, you know, the reasons that this group hadn't used choice is they said that they just hadn't needed to yet. They didn't have a need to see a doctor yet, but they were interested. And in the middle group, those who attempted without receipt, you know, who arguably were very dissatisfied with their experiences thus far, 78% would or might use choice in the future. And in the bottom group, those who actually received choice care, of course, 89% would or might use choice in the future. Next. So overall, we saw most participants were very satisfied or somewhat satisfied with VA healthcare. And, you know, just to remind us all that everyone, you know, did have in this group, in this sample, had barriers to traditional VA healthcare. But nonetheless, they were pretty satisfied with the VA overall. They were also satisfied with the choice program when they succeeded in getting care. But those participants who were unsuccessful in their attempts to use choice were highly dissatisfied with the program. They're much less satisfied with choice than with traditional VA healthcare. And it's important to address these areas of dissatisfaction with choice because it's a service that veterans value and they would like to use or continue using in the future. Next. So, you know, our results that Dr. Sigmund just went through did highlight some sources of dissatisfaction. There have been other studies of the choice program that reported on challenges with implementation during the first year. And some of those studies interviewed providers or program administrators or assessed patterns of utilization. Here, we're really focusing on the patient perspective, and our qualitative interviews revealed that the implementation challenges early on were main sources of dissatisfaction with the program, especially for the veterans who did not receive choice care. So we saw that scheduling and staffing through the third-party administrator was probably the greatest area of frustration. And we also saw that inadequate provider networks, the red tape associated with obtaining pre-authorization, and billing problems added to veterans' frustrations with choice. Next. Of course, we identified the themes of satisfaction when care was received. When patients actually got into the system, they reported satisfaction with improved wait times and reduced travel distance, which were really the two main goals for improving access under choice. Veterans in this study also reported that they received good care from choice providers in the community, which is encouraging. So I think there is reason for optimism, even amidst some of the dissatisfaction ratings. And I think one veteran sort of sums things up well. He or she said, I think it has potential to be a great program. It's been poorly handled and rolled out so far, but it's getting better. There have been improvements even since I've been in it. Next. So in terms of implications, first, I think it's important to note that, you know, the VA has Office of Community Care in particular has been working to address, you know, the implementation problems that were main sources of dissatisfaction in our study. So recently, the VA proposed the Veterans Coordination and Rewarding Experiences Act, which is also called the CARE Act. And the purpose of this is really to simplify and streamline the CHOICE program in order to meet veterans' healthcare needs more quickly and in a way that is easy to understand. So that, I believe, is currently under review in Congress. So there's a lot of interest in, you know, continuing for the VA to pay for care that is provided in the community. And as we go forward with CHOICE or the proposed CARE Act, you know, in our study, it shows it's going to be important to assess whether patients' barriers are removed and patient satisfaction can improve with scheduling, program information, and choice of local providers. It's also going to be important going forward in the ongoing evaluations of CHOICE to consider the experiences of those veterans who are trying to use the program. At this point, VA is primarily surveying patients who receive care in the community to learn about their access, quality, care coordination issues. But our findings demonstrate how we can learn about the systemic barriers patients face if we also survey those who are eligible but haven't received CHOICE care yet. Next. Of course, there are just a few limitations that I want to highlight. Our interviews were conducted with some of the first users of the CHOICE program. Our study was really conducted in the first 6 months of implementation. So these early patient experiences may not reflect views today. And sort of related in terms of generalizability, we recruited veterans from a select number of VA medical centers that serve relatively large concentrations of racial and ethnic minorities. We also used a stratified sampling design, so the demographic makeup of our sample doesn't reflect all CHOICE eligible veterans in those facilities. And with any qualitative study, we had relatively small numbers of participants, which prevented us from modeling differences in the qualitative theme. Next. So just wrapping things up here, we did find that veterans who are eligible with CHOICE are pretty satisfied with VA healthcare, and they were also satisfied with CHOICE when they actually received care through the program. So our sense is that CHOICE can work when the providers that patients want are available. The scheduling system is user-friendly, and the burden of using the program isn't too great. And it's important to reiterate that the veterans in our sample, even with though they were experiencing barriers, they do value and want CHOICE in the future. So it's not going away. And next. Dr. Zipman, if you want to take it from here.
Oh, sure. Well, I just want to recognize the query funding that we had for the project and to recognize our co-investigators, largely at the VA Pittsburgh Center for Health Equity Research and Promotion. The senior author is Michael Fine. The center director, Roz Stone, is our senior statistician. Shasha Gao is also a statistician on the project. We also work with Leslie Houseman, Kelly Perkett. Pete Tabor was one of the qualitative coders. Galen Switzer, Sonia Barrero, Bernie Good, and here in the Idea Center in Salt Lake City, we're also working with Megan Vanneman. So we are open for questions and discussion.
All right. Thank you, Susan and Audrey. We do have a few questions and a couple comments from the audience, so I'll start reading through those for you. The first question, it's regarding the question you asked veterans about using CHOICE. How would a veteran even know what the CHOICE program was?
I mean, it's a really good question. We submitted a letter letting them know that we would be reaching out to them. And so we spent time trying to explain exactly what the CHOICE question was, the CHOICE program was. In our screening, we also went into depth about what the CHOICE program was, trying to distinguish it between the older care in the community or referral system where they might be using a non-VA provider as part of the VA. So there were some challenges, but you know, our sense was that I think the patients understood the program that we were talking about.
And Dr. Sigmund, I'll just add briefly that also some of the patients received a card in the mail from their VA facility telling them that they were eligible for the CHOICE program and giving them a number to call the third-party administrator to enroll. So some patients had already been contacted by their facility to let them know that they were eligible for the program, and that's how they learned about it.
All right, thank you. Were the veterans in your sampling normally seen at a VA medical center or normally seen at a VA CBOC?
Oh, that's a really good question. Audrey, do you know by chance?
I don't know off of the top of the head, but we did specifically recruit patients who had received at least some of their care from a VA medical center. But it's possible that they had also received some care from a CBOC.
I mean, we targeted the DISC study sites, which are main VA medical centers. But of course, we recognize that somebody might have been seen at a main VA medical center and then also received care at CBOC. So my assumption is that it's going to be a combination of the two.
Okay, thank you. Can you request a provider by name when scheduling a CHOICE appointment?
So I believe that you can state if there's a provider you're interested in, but the third-party administrator really is the person who would go through the work of figuring out if that provider was a part of the network that was set up. And if they were not, then the veteran would not be able to go to that provider. So I think that was one large source of dissatisfaction with the program.
Okay, thank you. We've got several more questions coming in, so I'll continue going down the list. Did you analyze the impact of rurality or distance from a VA with respect to satisfaction with CHOICE?
We looked, I guess the answer probably is no. We looked specifically at whether or not veterans were eligible on their travel distance versus a wait time. And nearly everyone in the sample did experience a travel barrier, and we did not see any statistical difference in satisfaction with CHOICE based on whether they were eligible by distance only, wait time only, or distance and wait time. But that's as much of the analysis as we've done thus far with respect to veterans' geography and CHOICE satisfaction.
All right, thank you. What metrics have you found are being used by facilities to measure the success of the CHOICE/community care?
That's a very good question. I know that our colleague Megan Bannerman has been looking at that and discussing with VA Medical Center leadership as well as VISN leadership. I think we're not exactly sure the type of metrics that they're using.
All right. The next person said, a very interesting study. Thank you. Is there any indication from the interview material regarding veteran concerns that community providers were not familiar with veteran-related health issues?
So anecdotally, there were concerns. I know, for example, there was a period of time when there was a shift in hepatitis C treatment was being offered through CHOICE, largely because of funding levels related to the pharmacy and having extinguished the money that was available. They moved patients briefly into CHOICE. I know particularly with the patients who were seeking care outside the VA, there was a lot of confusion. The confusion existed at different levels. The TPA folks often didn't understand exactly who they were sending the patients to. And again, this is anecdotally. I can't say that this was the case systematically, but they were going to the wrong providers who knew nothing about a particular condition and weren't able to provide services. Also, there were patients who were talking about the fact that with, you know, because this was such a new program and many of the providers were new to the concerns that veterans had, that they didn't have a strong understanding of, say, maybe PTSD or other mental health issues that they had been experiencing and receiving strong and supportive care within the VA. And I don't know if that's because it was a rollout of the program, but there were a lot of snafus at various levels.
All right, thank you. The next question, were there any concerns or limitations related to inter-rater reliability?
No. I mean, one of the things that was really helpful for our inter-coder reliability is that we had been coding using the DISC code book, which is the dominant code book that was fueling this particular analysis. The coders have been working together daily for well over a year, so they had a great deal of familiarity with the codes and working with each other. So there fortunately didn't end up being problems.
Okay, great. The next question, were there any differences found between the TPA's HealthNet and TriWest?
That's a great question. We have not done a test of differences, but maybe Dr. Zuckman, you know more from the qualitative perspective.
So I think there were anecdotally differences. I mean, I don't want to say something is definitive because of a few people were stating that there were certain problems. But if I had to hazard a guess, and again, this is I want to put a lot of scare quotes around this. It seemed like there were more difficulties folks were having with TriWest as the sort of the platform for the TPA.
Okay. Did the eligibility paths for the veterans in your study come from the CDW or the TPA claims databases? Did IRB approvals through the VA extend to these third parties?
So my understanding is that, again, that Shasha Gao is the person who pulled the data. She was looking for people who had received services, which is why she went to the actual TPAs to find the data sets that had the receipt of services, and then also trying to make sure that people were eligible in general. So the cohort that had received services had additional codes to make sure that, you know, we were guided appropriately in our recruitment. So, and then what was the second question? I think there was a second half to the question. Can you remind me? Hira, are you still there?
I wonder if there's a problem with the audio.
Can you all hear us?
I can hear you guys, but I'm not sure what happened to Hira.
Oh, okay.
Hira, are you out there? Oh, Hira lost audio. She just messaged me. She lost audio.
I
was not paying attention to questions, so I'm not sure where she was at, but I can start at the bottom here and hopefully not ask you a repeat question.
We'll let you know.
Did you get to discuss with the TPAs challenges they faced when working with the VHA? And if so, what were the challenges?
So I have to say that what we did for this particular study, and hopefully my computer is coming back. Do you still see these slides? I don't know if you need to see them, Heidi.
I see the slides, yep.
Okay.
We don't need to, but yes, I can see them.
Okay, great. So we focused on we still focused in this particular study on veterans, and so I did have other cohorts in the study, and we talked to center directors and national leaders. We also talked to providers and pharmacists. However, I did not speak to anybody who is actually engaged in doing the work at the level of the TPA. I heard a lot of feedback about people's frustration with the TPA, but I did not speak to them actually. And I think the question that had escaped me was something related to how one needed to do the IRB for this work. And just as a reminder, this is a query quality improvement project.
Okay. Thank you. The next question here. For future studies, will you be comparing data among Choice 40, Choice 30, and Choice First participants?
So the idea is, are we going to be comparing people who are in the program because of distance versus wait times? Is that what the question is getting at?
I would guess, but I'll be honest, I don't know anything about Choice.
Okay. Audrey, is that how you
I interpreted the question as they were talking about, are we going to compare the results from this study with future cohorts with the evolutions of choice over time? And I think currently we've stopped data collection, so we won't be comparing eligibility rules and as choice continues to evolve going forward. Would be very interesting for future studies.
Right, absolutely, particularly as eligibility is expanded and as the movement toward decreasing the reliance on the TPA, trying to make sure that the check, whether or not the system appears to be working effectively. I mean, I know that individuals who receive care through choice will have the satisfaction survey, potentially extended to them. That cohort of people who may be trying and not having success, their voices are not currently being captured, and so I think that's a particularly important cohort to keep an eye on. So we would love to do that.
Great. And that person actually sent in a follow-up question. When do you think you'll release results from follow-up studies? That's a tough one to answer.
For follow-up studies, I mean, we all know that when you propose a study, it takes a while for funding and B, data collection. So I think we'd be talking something definitely in the future.
Well, good. Hira, do we have you back on the call?
Yes, I think so. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
It happens.
All right, let's see. One of the questions, do you know how receipt of community care via choice differs from traditional VA fee care in terms of the process of getting authorization and the first appointment with the community provider?
So I'm not going to say definitively, but my understanding, particularly talking to various VA leaders and the center directors about the process as the choice was rolling out, that with the normal care, what had been normal prior to choice care with VA, non-VA providers, my understanding is that there was a much more of a warm handoff between the provider making a suggestion that this is a particular provider who would be good outside of the VA to provide the service. There had been more, certainly longer standing networks and relationships with the VA and that set of providers, given the fact that choice was brand new. That's not surprising. And that the TPA was really supposed to be in charge, which meant that there was a lot more responsibility placed on the patient. My understanding is that a patient would ask for an appointment. And it might be, let's say, greater than 30 days, and the scheduler might say, are you interested in care through choice, and gives a number. And so that places a lot of the onus on the patient in that process. And also, the TPA was not in existence in your traditional approach to receiving care outside of the VA. It was much more of it in control related to that person's provider. So I think that's my understanding of some of the essential differences, at least at the initial rollout.
All right, thank you. We still have several questions, so let's see. this person said she would like to pursue satisfaction with the choice program for her doctoral dissertation. What would you recommend?
Okay. It's probably not surprising that I like the design I came up with because I came up with it. So maybe I'm not the ideal person to ask for this, but I do think maintaining an eye toward not only choice but satisfaction with the VA is important. I think it gives us a critical benchmark and tells us a lot of really meaningful information policy-wise. And as I keep indicating, I think that this cohort of individuals who may be interested in not yet receiving, having barriers in receiving services is important. I think one of the questions that methodologically we spent in the DISC team spending a good deal of time mulling about is exactly how do you ask the satisfaction question. I'll go a little bit more into the weeds than folks may not need to know, but when we developed the Likert scale and the STEM question for satisfaction with the VA, the SHEP satisfaction survey was in the process of moving from what was an older PICKER model to the CAPS model, and the way that satisfaction questions were asked was changing. We had done a pilot and had used the STEM, and as we moved into DISC, we kept that STEM. One of the questions I've mulled in my head is whether or not trying to make sure that you ask satisfaction using the more traditional CAPS question for overall satisfaction and other types of satisfaction might make more sense. I mean, it made sense considering where we are, and we obviously did thousands of interviews, and so, I mean, I'm satisfied with the satisfaction question that we used. But somebody was starting afresh, I think, really taking a look at the SHEP survey and making sure that they tied to that survey, I think, would be a good thing. As long as, you know, I don't know if that person for their dissertation is doing comparisons between the VA and outside care, then you're really looking at the CAPS, I think, would be the most effective route to go.
All right. Thank you so much. I think we have time for just a couple more questions, and then we'll start wrapping things up. For follow-up studies, will the samples include a wider range of demographics, more VA medical centers?
I mean, I think that would be a great idea. And, you know, the query choice evaluation project's data collection occurred in a very short period of time. I think making sure that there are different groups that are represented. So, for example, now that I'm at VA Salt Lake City, I understand much more about the highly rural populations. And you know, are there differences in satisfaction with choice? Potentially, I could see that going in two different ways. One, certainly not having to drive, you know, across state lines to go receive care is there are advantages there. Some of the issues that occur that when you're highly rural is that you might find that there aren't providers in the network. If that's the case, then that satisfaction might cut in a different direction. But making sure that you have different groups that are represented, it would have been great if we could have included more African Americans, Hispanics, and women, which was the dominant groups, or it was a stratified study. So there were like one-third African Americans, one-third Hispanics, and then one-half of the total DISC sample were female. And I would have loved to have been able to include veterans falling in those groups more in the current study. So a future study, I think, would really be aided by including those groups.
All right. Thank you. One last question then. You mentioned that earlier studies outlined some of the challenges with choice implementation. Can you share who those authors or studies are? Are there any white papers uploaded to the VA website or published articles?
Audrey, I'll let you respond, but certainly Kristen Maddox, I know, is going to be doing a cyber seminar soon, and she had done one on her cohort of women in the past, and I know that would be archived in the cyber seminar. Go ahead, Audrey.
No, I was just going to offer that I do have that information, but not necessarily off the top of my head. And if someone wants to shoot me an email, I would be happy to send along references I believe that there is a GAO report and then also a couple of publications in a recent medical care issue. So I'd be happy to forward that information along to whoever's interested.
The medical care issue would be a fabulous place to go for getting a snapshot of particularly the early rollout of the CHOICE program.
All right, Susan and Audrey, thank you so much for taking the time to present today's session. To the audience, I know there are a lot of questions we probably didn't get to, but you can contact the presenters directly, or you can direct your questions to virec@va.gov. And Susan, you were right. Dr. Maddox will be presenting for a VIREC Cyber Seminar next month. Her session is on Tuesday, February 20th at 12 p.m. Eastern. So she'll examine women veterans' experiences and perceptions of the Veterans Choice Program. Thank you, everyone, once again for attending.